Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
The Japanese have just officially laid down their arms. They have signed terms of unconditional surrender.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
We have the opportunity to move not only toward the rich society and the powerful society, but upward to the great society.
So tonight, to you, the great silent majority of my fellow Americans, I ask for your support.
Our long national nightmare is over.
The Panama Canal Treaty of 1903. That treaty, drafted in a world so different from ours today, has become an obstacle to better relations with Latin America.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Oh, I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully. All right. Those were some famous outtakes from presidents going back to FDR in 1941. And we're all sitting here with great expectations. Thank you, Mr. Dickens, for that line, for the president on training wheels to give his State of the Union speech tonight. And I have one statement for President Obama from the people. The let us say 8 to 10 million people who allegedly listen to this show on a weekly basis. Mr. President, we have one message. Wake up and smell the tea. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you care to wake up and smell the tea by calling the show, go ahead and do so. Today we're going to be talking all day about tonight, and we're going to be talking about the grilling today by Congress of former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, and the grilling of the Boy Scout Geithner, who blew it today and fell apart. I want to begin with a man who, actually, I have a mixed bag with Elijah Cummings. Of course, he is a liberal Democrat, and as a liberal Democrat, he's going to politically be on the opposite side from where I stand most of the time. But he looks to me like an honest, straightforward guy. And listen to what Elijah Cummings said to former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson today in clip three.
Do you realize that a lot of the American people believe that there's a sort of Wall Street club, and that, let me finish, that you all play golf together and you have a lot of fun, and then you know, when the billions come around, you're able to kind of distribute them? I mean, I'm just saying, do you know that that's how people feel?
I sure do. And even though
can you keep your voice up?
I said, even though I'm not a golfer, I sure know that's how people feel.
Yeah.
Now he goes on to clip four.
When they see these deals going on, then the next thing they do is they begin to look at where people worked. And then they see the relationships, and then they say, well, you know, we don't have a chance because it seems like they're kind of looking out for themselves, but not looking out for us. And so, you know, I think one of the things that bothers people is when they don't see transparency, then they begin not to trust. And when they begin not to trust, it becomes very difficult for them to go along with any program. And then when you put on top of that, that they can't see themselves benefiting. And I know that you mentioned that if we didn't do what we did, and unemployment may have gone up to 25%, but it's hard for people to even see that.
All right, now Paulson responds with the line du jour. The line today is, I know you're angry. That's what Obama's going to say tonight, which is, I share your anger. It's amazing to me that Obama's going to say tonight he understands why the people are angry. Of course, it's because of him and his policies. That's why we're angry. He's going to try and say it was that Nixon did it from the grave. Now, Paulson has the same line. The same PR agent wrote that he understands our anger. Listen to clip five.
Congressman, you've got it. And that's people are very, very angry, and I understand it, why they're angry, and they're rightfully so, because they don't see the connection.
All right, stop it. Yeah, I hear you. I hear your anger. What, did he go to an EST training class? I mean, S died in the 1980s. I hear you. I feel your anger. But go screw yourself, because although I got a $200 million in tax benefits, it doesn't matter to me anymore because you're never going to make me pay it back. So the best thing today was Representative Dan Burt. Remember him? Listen to clip nine. This is the best.
You were one of the top officers for Goldman Sachs, right?
Yes, the top officer.
And some of the people that work for Goldman Sachs went to work for Mr. Geithner.
I believe I know. Yeah.
And when you left Goldman Sachs and went to the Treasury, you were there 3 years, and you got $200 million in tax benefits because you didn't have to pay capital gains on $500 million worth of stock, right?
I would strongly disagree with that.
Well, that's what's been reported.
Let me just explain.
Okay, well, it's okay. You can respond. I'll send a question to you in writing.
Listen to what Representative Burton just said, is that when you went to the Treasury Department, you got $200 million in tax benefits because you didn't have to pay capital gains on $500 million in stock. I mean, does that explain why they take government jobs? I think so. You don't think it's because of they want to do public service, do you? Listen to clip 10 now from Dan Burton.
You came before our conference very nervous, saying, oh, my gosh, the sky's falling. We got to come up with this money very, very quickly. And you actually were visibly nervous when you came before our caucus. And then we have this bailout of AIG, and you don't know anything about it. Mr. Geithner had nothing to do with it. It just really boggles the mind that some of the biggest people involved in this whole thing, from beginning to end, had nothing to do with it. They didn't know. It was some. It makes you want to think that some clerk someplace was making these decisions. I don't think anybody's going to buy that.
Well, that's all good. It's wonderful, but is it all sound and fury? Yes. Will any of them pay 10 cents in fines? No. Will any of them spend 10 days in jail? No. But if you, let us say, run two traffic lights or drink two beers and get stopped, you'll go to jail. But if you rob $200 million, you go to the White House. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There's nothing you can say that I haven't said already, so don't bother calling the show unless you are absolutely bursting at the seams to say something. I know this is dry. It's, you know, not as good as sex addiction, which we did yesterday. And you really want me to talk about what is sex addiction? Is it sex addiction? What's the difference between sex addiction and, I don't know, you know, stuff like that, because that was a real popular topic with women. Everyone has emailed me that I know and said, who was that woman psychologist, Jane, who called, who said sexual addiction is nonsense. It's an invention. It's the, what did she call it? The disease or victimhood du jour. Everybody is a victim. Sexual desire and rutting like a mink. Choice. According to many people who have brains, we understand that this is all these are all excuses. So, I mean, I could do that. I mean, they really only want to hear from women who have done this. They don't want to hear from guys, because everyone knows that guys are dogs, but they really want to hear from reformed female sex addicts who are now devout religious, and they wear burkas and whatever, they bake cookies. I don't know. What can I tell you? Because I don't really want to talk about the State of the Union. He's going to give the speech. You know it's going to be kind of nothing. And here's a headline from Drudge. Hillary decides to skip the State of the Union. That's unusual. I wonder why. Clinton missing speech but not a security holdout. What does that mean? Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton is missing President Barack Obama's State of the Union address in order to attend a conference in London. But she is not the only absentee cabinet member. What does that mean? Why are they all abandoned? You know, heard of rats abandoning a sinking ship. I'll be right back.
Savage.
AIG had failed. I can't. Yes, in November, in the TARP, we made the Fed obviously can print money. And that's the right question, Congressman. Okay.
What I believe. By the time he gets through speaking for 2 minutes, you don't want to listen anymore, so you can do whatever. See, stop it. This is some kinds of. Some people use this as a weapon. They get you so crazy with the that you don't even listen. You leave the room so they can do what they want. You know, it's very disturbing to go through the It reminds me of Bugs Bunny. Listen to this one.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the state. Oh, gosh. I don't see why I have to learn the old pledge allegiance anyhow.
Hillary decides to skip the State of the Union speech. They claim because she has important business in London to talk about Afghanistan and Yemen, the security issues in the United States are such that basically, here's the security details of these, that one member of the cabinet must not attend the speech in case there's a catastrophic attack upon Congress, God forbid, that we should have one leader, so-called left. Here's a flashing red on Drudge. Thanks, Matt. You're helping me do show prep tonight. Obama will call for appeal of don't ask, don't tell. You hear this? This is his biggest and most important and most profoundly pressing issue. Repealing of don't ask and don't tell. So what he's doing is moving to the left. He's shoring up his radical base. He's slapping the independents in the face. He's slapping the conservatives in the face. He's slapping the mainstream Democrats in the face. He's slapping the church in the face. He's slapping the Hispanic families in the face. And he's going to repeal don't ask, don't tell. You hear, this is the number one issue in an age of terror. It's unbelievable to me. Instead of saying we're going to make sure the FBI actually gives you the truth about headdresses and bulletproof vests and such the next time, that you don't say there's no connection to terror. Instead of saying we're going to make sure that we're going to double down on our inspecting potential terrorists in America, we're going to have a lookout for radicals. Instead, this becomes his biggest issue. This guy is, I told you yesterday, and it confirms what I said, that you don't have to raise a voice of opposition to Obama. This man is imploding. He is now listening to the very same psychos who helped him hoodwink the American people. What the psychos on the left don't know is that the very same Americans they were able to sway in the past have awakened. They have smelled the tea, and they're not going to buy it again. So he can go appeal to his base all he wants. What's that going to get him? Nothing. His base already supports him. He's got to appeal to the centrist. He's got to appeal to the undecided. He's got to appeal to the vast middle ground of not Republican, not Democrat. Do you think that by repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, he's suddenly going to sway millions of voters that he's a great leader? I don't think so. I really don't think so. Now, there's, I think, some interesting news on the economic front, which is that there's a massive recall of Toyotas. I saw this earlier, and I thought that was very interesting, and I said this has to be political. Because remember all the years that American cars were being recalled and almost destroyed? Partly did destroy the American automobile business was the recalls. And I, at the time, thought that the recalls were orchestrated by the Japanese auto manufacturers who bought the congressmen to do this to GM and to Ford and Chrysler. That was a pet theory I had. I did. Well, now that the tide has turned, it could be that somebody somewhere is now going after Toyota on this accelerated could stick business and forcing a recall, stopping the sales of Toyota to destroy the company. That's what I think is going on. Now, it is true that according to the news reports, at least six deaths have been linked to faulty gas pedals. All right, nobody wants that. But why all of a sudden, if they've known about this since, they say, 1999, why all of a sudden is Toyota being hit with a monster recall right now? Can you believe what this is going to do to Toyota right now? I don't really have any sympathy for Toyota, incidentally. I have no sympathy because this is what partly destroyed, along with union pensions and union health care plans, partly what destroyed the American automobile industry, was the recalls. And I thought that they were orchestrated in part by Japanese auto manufacturers who bought our congressmen. That was a theory I had for years. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the callers. In WOR land in New York City, Steve, go ahead, fire away. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. The problem I see with President Obama is, and let me tell you, I went to law school at around the same time as he. We used to debate the black liberation theologists, and three of the hallmarks of that viewpoint were socialist theory, virulent anti-Semitism, and some belief that the bad that the U.S. does far outweighs the good. And the problem I see with Obama is he adheres to that philosophy, which is a sign that he may be intelligent, but he's certainly not wise.
Well, hold on. I can see two of those. Where do you smell anti-Semitism in Obama?
Well, here's the thing. 20 years at Trinity United Church in Chicago.
And there's no question that Reverend Wright was a stone-hearted Jew hater. There's no question he was an anti-Jew, anti-Israel, anti-American, anti-white hate monger. There's no question. Anyone who ever listened to him knows that. But I haven't heard a thing coming out of Obama yet that's anti-Jewish. Have you?
Like I said, Mike, he's not wise, but he's not stupid. And I, by the way, I am not Jewish. But far before he got elected, I did try to do a little homework on him, and I went on Trinity's website, and it's been cleaned up significantly.
Yeah, he sat for 20 years and listened to this. I get it. You're right.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
So, Axelrod, the street communist, goes on Wolfie Blitzer's show and leaks tonight that President Obama will not talk about jobs as much as he will about appealing to his base, and he's going to secret appeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, this is really unbelievable. So I wrote a little haiku about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It goes like this, very short. But remember, a haiku is short. Don't ask, don't tell, don't ask, don't tell, donuts don't tell. You have to understand the joke in order to get the joke. I can't explain it. That's it. Now, it shows you what's going on in the media landscape. Here you've got Obama moving so far to the left that he's acting just like the college associate professor that he was, coming up with issues that the American people don't care about. We care about jobs. We care about national security. What part of that doesn't he understand? A, all of it. B, some of it. C, none of it. D, all of the above. And it just shows you how out of touch O'Reilly is becoming on Fox News. He prognosticated that Obama would move to the right. Good job, Bill. Good job, Bill. I mean, what part of you are not knowing very much of anything don't you get, Bill? Bill O'Reilly says Obama's going to move to the right, and David Axelrod goes on Wolf Blitzer and says the president will seek repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Unbelievable to me. So who do you trust? Who do you listen to? Whatever. I'm not going to sell you on me. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me. I watch it all. You know, watch the world go around. Play the Beatles watching the world. Nah, it's too obvious. So Hillary's going to be in London. Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to be the big draw. Bernanke is going to get a hearing tomorrow. Geithner looked like a Cub Scout at a Marine meeting today. He looked like a Cub Scout who went into a meeting of Special Forces soldiers. Yeah, it's sad in a way. I don't get any pleasure out of, you know, making Geithner, you know, look worse than he is. It's actually frightening to see that they pick a guy as inexperienced as him. He looks to me like an averagely intelligent guy who went into the political world, and, you know, they use him as a front man. And it's sad to watch the guy being ripped apart by Congress today, when he, rightly so, you know, rightly so. But it's astounding. You watch Paulson. That, by the way, you can't say this is all partisan, because Paulson was the Treasury Secretary under Bush. Don't forget that. And remember, he was attacked today as well as Geithner. Congress is finally making believe that they heard us. We hear your pain. We hear your anger. So we're going to act angry now. Even though 3 months ago we were not acting angry, we were acting as arrogant as hell. Now we're going to hear you, because of Massachusetts, we heard you. We hear you. They all hear us now. We know you're rightfully angry. You folks out there are really angry. We know that. We feel your anger. We're really on your side. We're just like you. Here's Representative Marcy Kaptur, Democrat, Ohio, capturing Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner during AIG hearings in clip 11.
Can you provide, for the record, the names of the handful of bankers on the board of the New York Fed that elected you in 2003, please?
That is a matter of public record. 2003? Of course we can do that.
Thank you very much.
But Congresswoman, can I just say, what you just said was not true. I work in the public interest. Officials of the Federal Reserve work for the public interest, and they work for the government.
But the people don't elect you. The heads of the feds around the country don't elect you. It's the individuals who sit on the board of the New York Fed that elect you. Is that correct?
It's slightly more complicated than that.
Let's hear the next.
Let me ask you, now as Treasury Secretary, your chief of staff is the gatekeeper for access to you. Could you please provide his name?
His name is Mark Patterson.
Thank you. And for whom did he work before you selected him as your chief of staff?
He worked for the president's transition team.
No, before that. Which Wall Street firm did
and
he work for?
Before that, again, this is a matter of public record, and you know the answer to this question.
What
he worked
it?
For Goldman Sachs. But
thank you very
Mark
much.
Patterson,
yeah, you answered my question,
no,
Mr. Secretary. Now, let me say this.
Mark,
the AIG transaction, you have answered the question.
No, what you're
you've
doing
answered
is,
the question. Thank you.
So it's all Goldman Sachs. Now, who was the first one in the media to have pointed out that this is a government of, by, and for Goldman Sachs? It wasn't the leprechaun. It wasn't the hem. It was not the wall banger. It was good old Mike Savage. You may not like me, but I'm usually ahead of the pack in seeing what's going on. In fact, I created a Pledge of Allegiance do we have the Goldman Sachs Pledge of Allegiance that we did well over a year ago? Listen to this one. Well, tell me when you have it ready. Don't just play it.
I pledge allegiance to the stock of Goldman Sachs of Wall Street and to the gang for which it stands, one gang, indivisible, with liberty and profits for them.
Not bad. I did that when? I did that in November, I believe, October or November of 08, because I saw with Paulson taking a powder. I saw what went on under the Paulson-Bush regime. And then I saw them put the same people in place when Obama took power. Now, let me be very clear. I am not an anti-capitalist. On the other hand, I'm not a person who believes in unlimited freedom for people in government, or unlimited freedom with no oversight in businesses that manipulate the mortgage industry or manipulate the money supply. I have to be very clear about that. I have been on record as of last week saying I actually agree with Obama up to a point in terms of taxing some of the large banks. Many of you don't understand why I said that. And that is because I know a little bit of history, and the history of controlling Wall Street goes back to the Glass-Steagall Act, which I explained the other day. It was a very good law. It was put in place after the collapse of 1929, the stock market crash, and it was put in the Banking Act of 1933 to establish the FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and it introduced controls over banks in banking reforms and a controlled speculation. It was known as the Glass-Steagall Act, and named for the principal legislative sponsors, Carter Glass and Henry B. Steagall, if I remember. But the main provision of the early rules over banks prevented banks, a bank holding company, from owning other financial companies. This was in place until 1999, and it was only thrown out by the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act. The Graham-Leach-Bliley Act was signed into law by President Bill Clinton on November 12, 1999. And what this did was it opened up the floodgates of massive, uncontrolled, criminal speculation by the Pirates of Wall Street. Now, having said that, I'm in favor of Wall Street. I believe in the stock market. I believe in investment. It's the foundation of America's financial health, by the way, to have an investment community. You've got to be crazy not to understand that. However, if you let systems like that run themselves, you wind up with Madoffs and you wind up with Paulsons, in my opinion. And you say, well, what are you lumping Paulson in with Madoff? Well, you figure it out. You figure it out. Madoff got caught, but he was small potatoes compared to a Treasury secretary. As far as I'm concerned, Madoff sure was a crook. He ran a Ponzi scheme. He took the money from one guy and ran it up and then gave them profits from the other guy. We know how that worked. Well, we have a currency that has no basis in value. So what is that? Not a Ponzi scheme? We have a president and a Democrat Congress that is taking what Bush and the Republican Congress did and amping it up to the level of three, four, five times bigger than that. Why? Because no one has stopped them. Well, now they've heard the people's, you know, anger. So what are they going to do about it? Well, I didn't say get rid of Wall Street. I didn't say throw the bankers in jail. I didn't say create a government bank like in Venezuela. Don't get me wrong here. I am a thoughtful man. I'm a studious man. I study things. Of course we need to control these people. They're too smart not to be controlled. They're smarter than us when it comes to investment. You know, don't make any mistakes about it. These people are brilliant. Financial geniuses are in a league of their own. They're on the order of a nuclear physicist in many, many ways. You have to be brilliant to understand numbers at that level. It's not pure crookery to be able to manipulate numbers that come up with fiduciary instruments that have no basis in reality and sell them to people. You have to be a genius to pull that off. And then to be able to wear a white suit and tie and get a bulletproof limousine and work for the government while doing it, think of how smart the man is who could pull that one off. To have created fiduciary instruments that nobody understands, make hundreds of millions of dollars on them, and be so good at the chicanery that you wind up in a bulletproof limousine as a Treasury secretary, you got to understand how smart a guy like this is. I mean, don't underestimate the intelligence. So therefore, as smart as they are, they need to be controlled by the dumb people. The stupid dumb people and our dumb representatives need to rein in the geniuses. Because otherwise, you'll wind up with America the way it is today. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. What did I want to tell you that's new today? On a personal level, I went to a farmer's market with Teddy. Even though it says no dogs allowed, no one said anything. I don't understand. It's an outdoor farmer's market. What do you mean no dogs allowed? Another California catch-22 law. What do you mean no dogs allowed? And don't have a farmer's market in a shopping center outdoor. I mean, you know, I didn't say anything. So anyway, it was a little rainy, cold. So there's a poor guy, feel bad for these people, mainly the immigrants, because the liberals all eat for nothing. I swear to God, you see these white-haired Obama voters go stall to stall. Oh, yeah, I'll try that. That's very good. Can I have a little more? I feel like slapping it out of their hands. I have to control myself. I can't stand taking advantage like that of poor people. I hate it. They don't buy anything. They go to the Indian and they take his roti for nothing. They go to the African and they take the shea butter for nothing. Everything these cheap bastards can get for nothing, they take. And then I'm an Obama voter. Yeah, I'm all for the people, you rotten bums, you. I live in a county filled with the biggest phonies on earth. I love when you see the junk they put in the street, like a broken television or a chair that they'd have to pay to be taken away. They put it out and they put a little handwritten sign, free, take it. That's because they had to pay $5 or $10 to the garbage man, free. Well, let's give it away, dear. It's a thing nobody would want. Or a broken chair that the guy used 50 years ago at a desk. He puts out and they put a little sign, free. They're the same ones. They go to the farmer's market and everything they get for nothing from the Mexican grower. So I see a guy selling honey. I don't use honey anymore because it usually gives me a headache, and I used to like it as a kid. I found that I don't like sugars at all. I see a guy, I felt bad for him. He was a white guy, very tall, very handsome. He was like a movie star, looks, good looks, on the Peter Fonda look. Tall, good-looking guy. I felt bad for him, though. It was a rainy day. So I started, he had a little sign that says, beat your allergies with honey. He said, all right, I'll talk. So I said, what's your theory on honey and allergies? And he very shyly in a somewhat French accent said, Well, the honeybees pick up the pollen, and the local pollen goes in the honey, and if you take the honey, you build up immunity. I said, all right, I've heard the theory. So I bought a jar of this and a jar of that for $8 a piece. I mean, it was probably too expensive. I came home. I said, I don't know. I'll try it. I take a spoon of the honey. Right away, my eyes tear, my nose runs, and I get a migraine headache. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So tonight, the president, instead of talking about jobs, instead of talking about doubling down on national security since he has two strikes against him, if not more, he's going to talk about the most important thing on America's mind, which is repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now, whatever you think about this particular issue, you have to understand what a disastrous decision this is for the president to focus on this at a time like of the time we're living in right now. It makes no sense. And Hillary is in London. They say she scheduled a meeting there to talk about Afghanistan and Yemen. I don't believe it. She could have controlled it and gone tomorrow. She's not going to be there for another reason. She's distancing herself from him because he is poison. Remember what happened. He went to Virginia, the candidate lost. He went to New Jersey, the candidate lost. He went to Massachusetts, the candidate lost. The man is a disaster. I don't need anyone to tell me whether I'm right. I know what's right. I don't need the government to tell me what I see. I know what I see. Okay? New York, WOR, Vinny, go ahead. What's on your mind? What do you see? What do you say? What do you do, Vinny?
Mike, do you think Hillary's in London on your case?
Yeah, that's why she's skipping the State of the Union speech, is that she's there pleading my case before Gordon Brown. I agree with you. That's the reason she's there.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Vinny. Yeah, no, that's, I'm sure she's there. Personally, I'm sure she cares a lot about freedom of speech for the media. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. By the way, I'm dropping my Twitter and Facebook accounts. I decided I don't need it. I mean, it's like, what do you need it for? You have to, like, service it. So I'm not having it. I don't need it anymore. I knew it didn't have any meaning. People tell you need it. I didn't need it for any. We Twitter. What do you need to Twitter if you have a talk show? What do you need to Twitter for? To waste the time. Twittering, schmittering. Anyway, here we are. Here we are. Quakey. Haiti. I almost said, I said Haiti and Quake. I said, I called it a Quakey. Haiti and Quake, I called Quakey. Look how you forgot already, Haiti. 100,000 dead, millions homeless, and no one is gone already. How does this work? Catastrophe in the world, and we don't think about it. Is it because we're hardened? No, here's the reason. Because the ancient Romans were no different than we are. The ancient Greeks were no different than we are. The ancient Chinese were no different than we are. The philosophers of ancient Rome wrote the following. They wrote that the average Roman does not care about what's going on overseas. They don't care about what the legions are doing in Germania. The average Roman, he said, cares about the pebble in his shoe. Now, what does he mean by the pebble in his shoe? Taxes, 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 jobs, 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 safety, safety, safety. A government's number one job is to create and work only for the liberty of the people, according to Plato. And liberty means protecting us. They have failed to protect us. Remember, it was a citizen who protected that plane from going down, a Flying Dutchman. He is the one who should have been getting a medal tonight at the State of the Union speech. He should be there getting a freedom. The reason Obama's not giving him a gold medal for saving that plane from going down and beating up the underwear bomber is because it would make the government look like it is, like they failed us. You understand that? So he's not there. So they failed us with regard to safety. The taxes they know they have to raise in order to keep feeding this grotesque monster, the machine of government. And jobs they can't create. They don't know how to create jobs because virtually nobody in the cabinet has ever run a business. I don't know of any of them who's run a business, built one and created one. Now think about what I just said to you. Obama has never run a business. Hillary has never run a business. Biden has never run a business. Geithner has never run a business. I'm searching. I think that the economic advisor from Berkeley, the kind of heavyset woman, a lifetime academic, never created a product that anyone bought. So none of these people know anything. They're all working out of textbooks. So consequently, nothing good is happening from them economically. Do you know how hard it is to create a product, to sell a product, to make the product, to market the product, to service the product? Do you know how hard that is? You don't know how hard it is until you've actually done it. It's easy to sit on the sidelines and put down people who make things. You go try and do it. You go try to come up with something that people want. You know, the old American phrase, build a better mousetrap, and people will beat a path to your door. It's 100% true. It is 100% true, whether it's one of my advertisers who built a business on the back of a truck, and he's coming aboard soon in blinds.com, a man who started with a pickup truck and has one of the best companies in America built on the back of intelligence and hard labor, or Craig Smith with the Swiss America. I can name one after the other. These people all built it on their own. They know what it's like to have to keep a business going. Those of you who listen to this show are probably somehow in business one way or the other, or you're in professions where you have to maintain your professional standing or your client base, or you become poor or you go out of business altogether. And let me tell you something else. Talk radio is a business. I have to sell you every day, or you're not coming into this tent. You're not going to pay the admission. If I stop giving you what you come into this tent for, you got 75 other choices on a radio in your city. You've got unlimited choices on the internet, magazines, newspapers, you name it. It's a miracle that you listen to me. I know it's a miracle. When I started in 94, there was no internet. I used to have to go to the store and buy newspapers and magazines to do a show. Oh, they had a thing called wires. But what I'm saying is you can access news anywhere you want. You don't need me for the news. You need me for other things. And if I don't give it to you, bye-bye, Charlie.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com. Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
President will speak about health care. There's clearly a caricature of a health reform bill that is viewed differently by the public than when you break out its component parts. He'll take some time to discuss the important efforts that we've made in counterterrorism, continue to discuss what we've done in our efforts, not simply to confront in Southeast Asia the threats of terrorism, but in Africa, in the Middle East. I think he looks at the State of the Union as a time in which to update the American people on what's been done and where we go from here going forward. This is not about him. This is about what we have to do going forward for the American people.
That's White House press spokesmouth, the human gefilte fish, Robert Gibbs, earlier today saying what the president will address in the State of the Union. But we've just learned that he's going to talk instead about don't ask, don't tell. That's his biggest and most important issue on his mind. Does this make sense to you in a time like this when people are screaming for jobs, lower taxes, and better national security, that he's going to appeal to his most loyal and most extreme base elements? When you go to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that's not a mainstream issue, number one. But number two, it's certainly not going to sell in Peoria. Number two, it's not going to sell with the, wake up and smell a tea people. Why is he doing this? Why would Obama have decided today to appeal to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell audience when he already has them and he owns them? Why? Does anyone understand this? Because I don't understand who's advising him. What sense does this make? It's going to push the middle away from him. So I want to talk with you about, do you think Obama's finished from bad advice or just simply not even able to understand what he's doing? I have a caller who's going to say something about Obama that I want you to listen to, because I actually think there's a possibility for this. Ferris in Hartford, Connecticut, go ahead, please. What are you saying? Okay, Dud number one. New York City, WOR, Don. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I just wanted to let you know that my son's a New York City police officer, and he told me that all the cops back you 100%, and they take pride
in... That's very nice to know. Of course they do. The police commissioners wouldn't, the mayors wouldn't, but the working men and women in blue would. It goes across the board throughout America. I'm the Serpico of talk radio.
See things that no one else sees, and he feels that way about you, that you're on a cutting edge, and you see things that most people don't.
Yes, but a cop is supposed to be observant. A cop is supposed to see things that the average person doesn't see. The cop is the sheepdog. The rest of us are the sheep. So if he's walking down the street, he's supposed to be able to survey and see, okay, that guy doesn't look good to me. I want to go and see what he's doing. He can't do that anymore. They put 50 laws in place so that he knows the bad guy and he can stop him before he does it. But the vermin in the ACLU, the vermin in the media, the vermin in the law courts prevent the police from doing their job. It's the same with the military.
It's true.
All right, so now you understand why the cops love me. That's all. What else is new? By the way, I want to mention again, for those of you who listen to me in the San Francisco area, beginning Monday, I'm on a new station, 860 on the dial, 50,000 watt, all sports station. I'm the only talker, and you're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's going to be me and sports and you, and I have a powerful signal to bury the other talkers in the Bay Area where they belong. They should retire. They should go back to practicing law and lying to their wives and not waste their time. Once I get in there, they're finished. They've had a very good time while I've been off the air. They think that they're geniuses because the icon of the afternoon drive in San Francisco was not on the air for 4 months. They all thought they were geniuses in the media. They ought to take a job somewhere else, work in OSH. They can get a job in the paint department. They should leave talk radio while things are still good. I got the OSH calendars, by the way. We got to buy them on eBay. Phil bought them for me. Very popular item. They don't even advertise on the show. I don't know. I have their bucket in the boat. I have an Orchard Supply bucket. I have the Cabobway instead of on the Savage Nation. I just love all these companies. Oh, he's too controversial. What do you mean I'm too controversial? I represent the average American. If that's too controversial for you, go advertise in Syria. Pittsburgh, PA. Don, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm serving my 37th year on the local legislative body in Bethel Park, Pennsylvania, a community of 34,000 residents. I'm a conservative Republican, not a rhino, representing a Democrat ward. What I wanted to tell you is that our monthly business meetings are on live TV. On our January 11th monthly meeting, I took advantage of my public recognition and the live TV to discuss your latest thought-provoking book, Banned in Britain.
Oh, my goodness.
Your invitation to speak to a elite British forum, your name being added to a list of terrorists and murderers, which resulted in your invitation being rescinded.
I appreciate
your appeal to Hillary Clinton for help and a belated reply from a third-level bureaucrat saying no help is forthcoming.
It's interesting to me, Don. That's amazing. The Republican Party should come to my aid. If they really wanted to appeal to the crowd that is going to determine the next president, the next Congress, they really ought to get behind me, don't you think?
Well, sure.
But, Don, you want to see something amazing? I just saw that a plane was diverted in an emergency landing in South Carolina, and they say on it were two hosts from MSNBC who were heading down there to headline the South Carolina Republican Convention. Who are they? Joe Scarborough. Can you imagine that a guy like him, as dim as he is, that's who they're choosing? Hasn't the Republican Party come to understand that hacks like him do not appeal to the average American? The people who just put Brown in power are not the type that listen to that guy?
A point I wanted to make about your book is several hundred reservations have been requested from the librarian, so I just wonder if you give us any help getting additional
copies. Oh, okay. I hear what you're saying. You'd like additional copies. Don, I'll tell you what we're going to do. If you stay on the line, I'm going to send you 5 free copies. No, I'm going to make it 10 free copies of Banned in Britain to Don in Pittsburgh. Guys, take down Don's name and send him to Becky in Florida. We got 10 free copies going out to him. Yeah, they should be in libraries. That's all. This is a time in American history that will be remembered in the future. All right, what do you want to talk about? We're waiting for Obama to speak. We know that he's going to talk rubbish. He's going to trash talk us. We all know it's double talk. We know that he doesn't have any idea how to create a single job. All he knows how to do is tax and spend, spend, spend. He has no idea we are at war with Islamic terrorists. He still treats them as though they're common burglars who broke into a 7-Eleven. He gives them their Miranda rights when they should have been given a rubber hosing in a dark cell somewhere. I mean, it's astounding to me that he doesn't understand the American people are on to him. Cincinnati, Martin, you're on the Savage Nation. Martin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You know, I really think you were talking about why is he going in after these people he already has. I think it's because he's really afraid that he's losing them. You know, there's
all right. So in other words, he knows he cannot get the center. He knows he can't get the right. But since the left is screaming bloody murder because he hasn't thrown them enough red meat, he now has to appeal to his most strident base elements, and that would be the don't ask, don't tell crowd.
I believe that, yeah, 100%. That's exactly my thoughts, too. Man,
well, how do you think that's going to play on Main Street? Not very well.
No.
Well, all I can say is don't ask, don't tell, don't ask, don't fail, and donuts don't tell. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, Chicago. Matt, you're on the Savage Nation.
I was going to agree with you on a point you made earlier about the Toyota recall conspiracy. And it's funny that you read my mind because I was talking about that with my friends at work, those exact things today. And my take on it was...
You mean why all of a sudden is Toyota getting a recall when they've done it to American companies for 20 years? Because I knew it was a conspiracy that, in my opinion, the Japanese manufacturers bought Congress to go after GM, go after Ford, go after Chrysler on the most minuscule problems and have the cars recalled and continuously kick them in the groin. And I couldn't understand for the life of me why the Japanese companies seem never to have a recall. And that's because they own the congressmen on these committees. Now, all of a sudden, they're getting recalled. How did this happen?
Well, look at the bailout. So now we've got a vested interest.
Oh, because the government owns GM. They suddenly understand what competition is. And now they're going after the Japanese car companies. Oh, so clear. I'll be back. I am Moses. I am Abraham. I am Isaac. I am Charlemagne. I am John Wayne. I am Coltrane. They try to suppress me, try to redress me, called me incorrect, deserving no respect. I am Hatton. I am Hatton. Even Mountbatten. I am Eisenhower, not a wallflower. I am Washington. I am Pershing. I'm MacArthur. I'm Kipling. I'm Audie Murphy. And I'm Sky King. They'll steal your crown, trample you down, take your good name, and put it to shame. I am Gene Autry. I am Roy Rogers. I am Tom Mix. They try to push me over the River Styx, but it won't mix with my true blood, which runs thick for America. I am the bane of those vain. I am the weather vane. I am Michael Savage.
Savage.
That was good. When did I do that? What year was that? You have a date?
That was pretty good.
April of last year. That was nice. So we have the speech in part from Drudge now leaked to him. I don't know how he gets this. I have no idea. But it's the normal, you know, what you'd expect. We face big and difficult challenges on what the American people hope. What they deserve is for all of us, Democrats and Republicans, now to work through our differences, to overcome the numbing weight of our power. All of a sudden, numbing weight. Here's a guy comes raging in from the communist left, and he's shocked that there's resistance to him. I mean, numbing weight of politics. No, we were going to roll over and turn ourselves into the ex-Soviet Union because you wanted it. Blah, 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 chance to get a job that pays the bill, a chance to get ahead, most of all, the ability to give their children a better life. Boy, this is really great. I mean, this is some rhetoric. There's not one word in this that you're ever going to remember. It's not like, Mr. President, tear down that wall, or ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. There's not a word in here that has any depth to it. You know what else they share, says Obama? This is coming up tonight. They share a stubborn resilience in the face of adversity. And now he's already brown-nosing America. After one of the most difficult years in our history, oh, it was bad for you? 135 flights in Air Force One, and your wife has 135 servants at the government expense? What was so difficult for you? Huh? That was a bad year for you? After one of the most difficult years in our history, they remain busy building cars and teaching kids, starting businesses and going back to school. They are coaching Little League and helping their neighbors. As one woman wrote to me, they were strained but hopeful, struggling but encouraged. Oh, wow. Now again, he's appealing to America's spirit. We do not give up. We do not quit. Oh, boy. We don't allow fear or division to break our spirit. Ugh. In this new decade, it's time the American people get a government that matches their decency. Well, why don't you just resign? Maybe that would do it. If he said, and for that reason, I'm stepping down tonight so Joe Biden can take the reins, because at least he's a centrist Democrat, not a radical communist with a machine from Chicago behind him. We'd say, all right, we buy it. No, instead he says, and tonight I'd like to talk about how together we can deliver on that promise, all right? And he says, by the time I'm finished speaking tonight, more Americans will have lost their health insurance. Here we go again. Again, health insurance. Why don't you just level with the American people? I want you morons to pony up more of your money to pay for illegal aliens, because once I legalize them, we'll have a Democrat machine for the next 1,000 years. We'll have a 1,000-year Reich. I will not walk away from these Americans, and neither should the people in this chamber, he's going to say. He's going to say, rather than fight the same tired battles that have dominated Washington for decades, it's time for something new. Oh, it sounds like Lenin now. Let's try common sense. Let's invest in our people without leaving them a mountain of debt. Ha, 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 ha. Here's a guy who inherits $1 trillion in debt. He makes it $3 trillion. And he says, let's not leave them a mountain of debt. So how's he going to do that? To close that gap, we must take action on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue to end the outsized influence of lobbyists. Duh. The man has appointed one lobbyist after another to a position in government to do our work openly. Oh, really? To do our work openly, you and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi meeting in the dark of night, in dark rooms across Washington, D.C.? That's your idea of working openly? And that's why I came to Washington. That's why, for the first time in history, my administration posts our White House visitors online. Oh, yeah, sure. And that's why we've excluded lobbyists from policymaking jobs. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's nobody from Goldman Sachs in the government, for example. Well, they're not lobbyists. He's not lying there. Now he says it's time to require lobbyists to disclose each contact they make on behalf of a client with my administration of Congress. It's a little too late for that, since the debt's already $3 trillion. Oh, well. There we go. Here we go again. I can't even read anymore. I will also go on Congress to continue down the path of earmark reform, he's going to say tonight. You have trimmed some of this spending and embraced some meaningful change, but restoring the public trust demands more. For example, some members of Congress put some earmark, blah, blah, blah. Tonight I'm calling on Congress to publish all earmark requests on a single website before there's a vote, so that the American people can see how their money is being spent, blah, blah, blah. All right, more of the same. The man has done one earmark after another. The Democrats have posted earmarks to the extent that they're bigger than Obama's ears put together. If you took every earmark that was put into every spending bill over the last year since this guy came to town, I can guarantee you they wouldn't fit inside both of his ears if they were put on a post of the size of Mount Rushmore.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
are. Here we are. We're all getting ready for the big nothing tonight. The big nothing. You know, you talk about the government media complex. You got George Stephanopoulos. Goes to lunch with Diane Sawyer and the other folks at the mainstream media, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox News. They're all one and the same, by the way. They're just different varieties of the mainstream media. And they go to lunch with the president, and Stephanopoulos has the nerve to come out of the meeting and say that Obama's upbeat and he should be compared to Reagan. It's amazing to me. And you talk about the government media complex. How does Steve Jobs of Apple get to be national news because he introduced introduces a new product? Wouldn't you like to be able to be given the entire orchestra of the American media when you introduce a new product for your business? How could this guy get the whole media to get excited about nothing? A new gadget from Apple. What do you need a monster thing like that in your hand for? Well, iPad? It has, you know, references to bodily fluids that I don't even want to go into. Well, who came up with that idea? To call a product the iPad when it has references to bodily fluids in it? What a mistake that is. I mean, who did they consult with there at Apple for that one? They should have run it by me. I mean, I know about what words and what they mean. iPad. You know, do I have to spell it out for you? It's like a car came out known as the Nova, the Chevrolet Nova. It was a fairly popular small car in America. They sent it to South America. Nobody bought it. Why? Because Nova means no go in Spanish. Nobody in General Motors knew that Nova meant no go. Then no one bought it. It was no sell. The same with iPad. What guy is going to buy an iPad? Would you buy an iPad? I mean, I would be ashamed to own it. I'll let it go. I don't want to get into this. I don't want to get into it. We're all waiting. Hillary decides not to be there. Toyota recall, blah, blah, blah. I noticed that the hemorrhoid beat the wall banger in the rating system. That's going to kill the wall banger. See, the wall banger was a fill-in for Rush, and he did very well for a fill-in. He's gotten away with murder. He has people believing him, and now all of a sudden comes along a bigger faker than him, and the other faker now outdoes the first faker. At least O'Reilly has a degree from Harvard. I mean, you got to give him that. These two, the two of them together, donate up to a high school degree. I like Brett Baer at Fox News. He's sober, reliable, centrist. I like him, and he's the only one who covered my plight with Great Britain. Greta Van Susteren, I never cared for. She was always, to me, Scarface. I can't forgive her the three things. Number one, she's a liberal from CNN. B, she's with Scientology. Schlepp Smith, I never liked. I don't go for the pretty boy look. And he's a lib. The other one at CNN, Nancy Grace, how she stays alive, I don't know. How the woman doesn't collapse from her own disgust, of self-disgust, I'll never understand. Larry King, all right, he was around when Moses was walking the earth. You got to give him credit for still, you know, getting up there and punching. The others don't exist. The half creature there on the bottom of the list, the half thing that I believe her mother appeared in the movie as Pat, the creature from the Black Lagoon. And then the guy with the cow degree, no one listens to them anymore. Unbelievable. Then you got the fishmonger there, too, moving ahead of them. The fishmonger from the Lower East Side.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I know everything. I'll tell you who I am. You're them Republican. They want to burn the earth up.
Even she's doing better than Grace. The fishmonger. The pickle seller. The pickle saleswoman. She tried to get me on a show many times on CNN. Like I didn't know who she was. The pickle woman. The pickle woman, I call her. I gave her a name already. You know who I'm talking about, right? You can't even mention her name. The pickle woman. The pickle woman's daughter. She looks like a woman I used to know on Delancey Street who wanted a stand of pickles. They gave her makeup, and she's on CNN already, selling the same baloney that they would have sold over a pickle stand. Well, I'm getting ready for my big magazine interview. The reporter's coming up Friday night. And I'm spending 2 hours with him Saturday. 2 hours. Don't kid yourself. You know, I got it. You can dismiss me all you want, but with the New Yorker interview as a profile, that was one thing, and I'm very, very happy for that. That was like a crowning achievement of my media life, because I'm an interesting guy with a great background, with a good education, with a lot of bestsellers, and these writers know it. They're smart enough to know it. They're not jealous of me. They're not in the same sphere. They're not like the pickle woman or the. Or the corn beef, whatever. So now this magazine is going to trump the last one. You're not going to believe it. So they're sending a photographer out. next week. So now I'm facing a dilemma because I'm a radio guy and I don't pay much attention to my hair or makeup. I don't do makeup. I'm first of all, I'm a guy. B, I don't do television. C, when I did television, I hated the makeup part of it. It always made me itch for 3 days. And there was always the issue of who put the whose face was the makeup on before you in the green room. Like, you always imagine there was like a prostitute that was on just before you. Because that's the extent of the media today. Just before you went on, it was probably either a politician or a prostitute. In either case, I would not have wanted the makeup, like the rouge put on if it had just been on John Edwards' mole before me. I mean, what if that makeup puff had been put on John Edwards' face just before I walked in there? So I didn't like the idea of makeup. Then I don't like anyone touching my hair with strange combs. And like brushes, it's like, it's very, you know, like dirty. I mean, like in those green rooms, like I don't want to use. So you got to give them your makeup and your, so I don't have makeup. So if they're going to do, it's just a face shot, by the way, it's not video. Just let it be what it is already. You know what I'm saying? What do I care? What do I need makeup for? I mean, just unadulterated me. It's, you don't listen to me for my face. You listen to me for my mind and my voice. So how can they capture that in a photograph, I wonder? They're sending a photographer from Chicago. It should be interesting. All right. Then the reporter, just a quickie. The writer, sorry, is coming up. Two-hour sessions, question and answer. Question and answer. Here's the question, here's the answer. Like, I don't know. The question would be like, what do you think of God? How did you get along with your mother? Was there anyone in your family you liked? Do you have any friends? I don't know what he's going to ask me. So I had a choice whether to meet him after the show Friday night for the first 2 hours. And I said, no, thank you. I mean, I'm exhausted after a show. I'm liable to make a mistake. And another rule, let me tell you, if you ever get an interview request, do not do it over a dinner or over a drink. Never. Because you're going to make mistakes if you drink. So I have a firm rule I've learned. I've become like a wise old guy. No interviews, number one. And if you do them, never over a drink. Even though the last one I did over six beers, I take that back. In fact, I drank repeatedly with the New Yorker guy. That's right. I brought beer out. It was a very hot afternoon. I remember now. It was after a show, right? We drank limitless beer and peanuts. All right, take it back. I actually do better when I drink. So, all right, maybe I'll have them for dinner. No, I won't do it in whatever. It's too cold to drink right now. I had a lot of red wine later. Can I tell you something about red wine? The night before I went to a restaurant, I ordered some red wine from Italy. Horrible. I had one sip. One sip, I already felt a backhead headache. I sent it. I said, sorry, I don't want it. Last night, I pulled out a bottle of, it was Chianti. I had it in one of my locations from 2000. Now, Chianti is a Sauvignon, Sangiovese grape, number one. Many people get headaches from Chianti wine, and I know about the whole tyrosine issue. I wrote about it in 1983. So you should understand a lot of it is not exactly true, and the tyrosine levels go down in time. I had a bottle of, what was the name of the brand? I shouldn't even give it, but it was a Ducale. You know what it was. Gold label, 2000 Oro. And all of the rough, you know, taste went out of the wine. I was able to drink like a half a bottle, no headache. I woke up feeling like there was velvet between my joints. It was amazing. I'm not going to repeat it again tonight. I mean, red wine makes me sleepy. God. It slows you down the next day. You become almost like a normal person. And if you're in my line of work, you don't want to be like a normal person ever. You can't do this job. All right, what do you want to say about Obama? What do you want to say about Obama that we haven't heard already 15,000 times? Hey, if I were writing a speech tonight, it wouldn't be about don't ask, don't tell. I wouldn't give platitudes about job creation and health reform. No one wants to hear it. They know he's A, not capable of creating jobs, and they don't want to hear any more about health reform. They know what it means. So there's only three things we want from a government. Number one, national security, safe streets, clean streets, lower taxes, and a less regulations in the business environment so people can go out and take a chance on a business. We need tax credits for investment. We need tax reduction on income. We need the rich people to stop being targeted by this member of the church, Reverend Wright's philosophy of get the rich. We need to hear less of that. We need more of America, and we need less of the Soviet Union. Guess what we're going to get tonight? Neither. Well, we have to listen to it. I'm going to listen. Admittedly, I will. It's like an hour. Do we have the counter going yet on the show, like the morons on television? Only 76 minutes and 9 seconds left. till the great one appears. Only 76 minutes and 8 seconds left. Only 76 minutes and 6 seconds. Oh, come on, that's Wolf Blitzer, that dummy. How much does he make a year, do you think, Beowulf? How much could they pay a putz like that? A schmuck like Wolf Blitzer, in my opinion, should work in a Midwestern department store in the hosiery department and make around $49.7 after a lifetime. What is he doing on a television show? He looked like the kind of nice guy who was in a haberdashery, let's say, in Truman's town, and he worked in his father's haberdashery. Never could he have built a haberdashery. Never. He could have worked in his uncle's haberdashery. No one uses certain words nobody uses anymore, like haberdashery. Well, I wouldn't even go in. It sounds like it's something to do with plants. Haberdashery. Let's think of some other antiquated phrases that are no longer used at all, you know, like big words. I like big words, you know. There are uses for big words if they actually apply. Even if you're a man of the people, you should use them when they're the best word. You don't have to use four words for one if the one word is better than the four, said the fool. New York, WOR, Patricia, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You know, Michael, I was listening to your question, if I understood it correctly, is like, where is this president coming from? Where is he going? I have a feeling he doesn't want the job.
No, he's very unhappy. He never thought it would require work, and he thought everybody would like him.
You know, when you're on the streets...
This is a guy who, from the day he arrived in Hawaii, the rich white liberals from Kailua greased the skids for him, rolled out a red carpet for him, got on their hands and knees for him. He was the multi-ethnic kid. I know exactly the types that cultivated him in Hawaii. I met them. I know the communists. I know exactly who they are. And what they did was they never let this guy run into a stone wall in his whole life. They sheltered this guy all the way up to the presidency. Now he comes there with these cockamamie left-wing, radical left-wing ideas from the University of Hawaii. These real cockamamie losers go there. And he said, oh, I can't understand why there's such discord, why there's such contempt in the nation, why there's such a lack of partisanship. What? He can't understand it? No, all of a sudden the American people are going to roll over to Joseph Stalin alight here.
He doesn't even have the strength of a Joseph Stalin or the core of a Joseph Stalin. That's why nothing that he stands for is going to pass. He reminds me of, I'm going to say this as a young woman, as a guy who sees the most gorgeous woman in his life and does everything he can to chase her and finally get her, and then 6 or 9 months or a year after he's gotten her, he's no longer interested. So what I'm trying...
I would go along with that analogy in another way. He sees a beautiful woman... He does everything he can to get her, and then when he can have her, he walks out of the room out of fear.
You got it. Because when he was on the streets of Chicago, he was holding court. He's not holding court anymore.
Because he's holding court, and no one likes it. They don't like the game. They don't listen to him. And they're listening to him saying, well, what are you talking about? We heard this before. This is college pap. This is college garbage. Health care. You're not Fidel Castro in Cuba. Everyone has health care in America. The illegals get it for nothing in the hospitals. What do you mean we're going to give them health care?
He doesn't.
Everybody knows what this is all about. This is to pay back La Raza. How come this has never come up? Do you know that this president took the president of La Raza and put her into a cabinet post in the United States of America? He has La Raza in the White House.
He has a different core. This is a man who claims he sits in a Christian church. But if you
well, we can criticize him all day. I mean, I appreciate it, but I'm not going to do it because I felt the tinge of a sore throat when I reached that point just now. I am going to watch it tonight. Only, you know what I can't stand? You want to hear Amateur Hour? The applause. I cannot take it. I don't care if it's Reagan or Schmagan. You know, let the man give a speech. I would say no applause till he's done. Every second, whatever he does, and ladies and gentlemen, the sergeant of arms, I love when they all walks down the aisle, and they shake the hands from the top like he's a sporting event. It's so tawdry. The whole American political system has become a laughingstock, if you ask me. Putting on a show like this, let the guy get up and give a speech and analyze it, you know, in a sober manner, like in Russia. Make believe you're in the Ukraine or something with a guy with like a bad, like a Borat suit. I'd rather see a newscaster with a Borat suit and a deadpan delivery, you know, like in a half Russian accent, analyze it instead of this garbage. What's with the cheerfulness every minute? What man on earth is cheerful all the time? Who goes along with this, how to win friends and influence people anymore? You know, smile and kiss babies, but the whole thing every second, clap, clap. You can't even listen to the guy. It's so distracting. It's like being in a bad restaurant where amateurs drink a glass of wine and start to scream. That's how Congress sounds to me. And so tonight I come before you, and I'm going to say to you the following thing. Oh, already a genius. They break out in applause. They don't stop. And so tonight I'm going to say to you that the number one thing on everybody's mind that everybody must have from the time they are born until the time they go into an old age home is proper health care. Oh, we never heard that before. And therefore, we have to lower costs by ruining the insurance industry. We must drive the doctors out of the hospitals. We must destroy all of the private hospitals and turn them into one government hospital, at which point everybody will have the worst health care in the United States that they have ever seen. It will be akin to the ex-Soviet Union, but everybody will have it. Oh, I'll be right back. Savage. Is 64 minutes and 3 seconds until the great one speaks. I mean, if Bush were in power, he would say nobody's talking about the Quakey Hake tonight. I mean, the Haiti Quake tonight. I mean, the Quakey Hake. I know someone always says heat seater instead of seat heater. They transpose. There's a way to fix that. I say slow down and say seat. Think seat heater, not heat seater. Don't say Quakey Hake. It's the Haiti Quake. But they're not talking about it. Already the government... Media lemmings already. It's the White House. They're already lapdogs. They're there already. Stephanopoulos and Sawyer, the lapdogs, already there. Out front, comparing him to Ronald Reagan. So let's see. He's Ronald Reagan now, and Michelle is Nancy Reagan. That's an interesting one. How'd that happen? I don't know about you, but she's like been coming out of this behind the curtain now. I don't know where they got that from. Where they get the idea she was going to help his popularity. She has the scariest eyes I've ever seen. I don't care if she's talking about apple pie. I'm sorry. Don't include me in that, applause gallery. Something about it gives me, like, the eeriness feeling. You talk about Madame Defarge. No. I think that Biden would be a better president right now. I'm a centrist Democrat. Yeah, liberal, so what? But centrist knows the limits. And understands the danger we're in from a national security point of view. Maybe Obama will resign within a year. You think that's a possibility? Has a president ever resigned? The guy said, you know what, I hate this job, I'm leaving. I'd rather, you know, stay home and play hoops with the kids. I don't need the Air Force One. I'm a simple guy. I want to go back to Chicago with a stapler and be a community organizer. I want to put, he's never going to do that, is he? He could certainly go to work for ABC. What a job he'd have. What a living he could make. Murdoch? Oh, Fox News? And now our lead newscaster, Barack Obama. Well, welcome to the show. Why not? Why couldn't Roger Ailes and Murdoch hire Barack Obama, give him a job on Fox News? He'd be happier. It's an easy job. You get up, same teleprompter system. Smarter guys write it, and you just read it. That's all. And you show up with a nice tie. And makeup and boom, you make a couple of million bucks a year. What could be better than that? I didn't say radio. That's another story. He could go to work for Fox and just leave the job to Biden. Who needs a job like that? I mean, he's a smart guy. What is he? He ought to go out and make a living now. He should capitalize on his popularity like every other American. Anyway, just talking. Hillary's not there. You'll notice that tonight. And he's going to mention don't ask, don't tell as the most important thing in American history, that we all have to absolutely do this or the whole country's going to collapse.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
is the Savage Nation. Here are the headlines on my great website, michaelsavage.com, with almost 2 million uniques a month. Number one, Democrats woo Snow and Collins in hope of saving health reform. They call them centrist Democratic senators. Maine GOP senators, Olympia Snow and Susan Collins, they call them mainstream Republicans. We know what they are. They're rhinos. They're not worth the name a Republican. They're just like all inspector in a skirt. ABC News, White House says Obama to explain to Americans why they're angry. Hey, it's you. Of course that's why they're angry. It's because of him. And the turncoat all inspector is down 14 points in the latest poll. Former U.S. Rep. Pat Toomey has opened up a 14-point lead among likely voters in his bid to deny U.S. Senator Arlen Specter his sixth term. Well, I guess the people are not quite that stupid. Muslim-turned-Christian asks Obama for help. Throwback outfits to be thrown out in France. Those would be the Muslim veils that create a nightmare for any modern society. There used to be a statement, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, but when it comes to radical Islamic women, it's when in Rome, do as the Muslims do. Mideast headdress seized with weapons and a map of a military facility, and of course it's not terrorism, of course, according to the FBI. Obama's honeymoon with media is history. Schwarzenegger has said send prisoners to Mexico, but of course he said he wants to build a new prison with U.S. money. What's that all about? You know, I mean, why is he saying that? Al-Qaeda aims to use WMDs against the United States. That's horrible. And the story that won't go away is that a South Carolina politician is making a very public apology for making a kind of veiled reference to welfare recipients as stray animals when he said that if you feed them, they're only going to have more babies. I don't know. What about that? Indonesia considers tearing down a statue of Obama known as Little Barry. Why in Indonesia? I thought he was born in Honolulu. Oh, well.
They tore down the statues of Lenin and Saddam, too.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Teen abortion rates have increased. Despite billions of dollars spent by national and state governments, groups like Planned Parenthood on promoting birth control and contraception, teen abortion and birth rates have increased. What's that all about? Could be the kiddie porn or what?
I guess when you have a whole industry that's devoted to getting a profit from that, that's what you end up with.
I guess. Support Michael Behenna through the Savage Legal Fund and write to him. Carry the address on michaelsavage.com. He is the innocent soldier, the heroic Army Ranger who has been railroaded by the U.S. Army. Now, we should look in a little more detail at just a few of these stories because they're worth looking at. I think the biggest one that we need to talk about is White House says Obama to explain to Americans why they're angry. You'll hear that very shortly during his State of the Union speech. And he'll try to pacify you with false promises and smooth salesmanship. But Americans are not buying it. Obama doesn't understand that the American people are fed up with his far-left policies. The problem isn't how he's selling it. It's what he's trying to sell. America doesn't like the product, Mr. Obama. Government health care doesn't work for them. Eco-fascist and fake green jobs does not sound too good to them. Nationalizing the bank doesn't appeal to them. Wake up and listen to the voters of Massachusetts. Shall I say wake up and smell the tea? Or the voters of the entire nation will teach you a bigger lesson in November? As I said, wake up and smell the tea, Mr. Obama. That's a good one, isn't it, Beowulf?
That's excellent. A time for another tea party.
The Mideast headdress seized with weapons and a map of a military facility from the man in a motel room have produced a few questions which are not being answered. One, why are there so many American Muslim converts who are joining forces with the enemy and whom the government refuses to root out until they've either accumulated an arsenal or shot a dozen people? Why don't they take them out before they do it? Answer, ACLU. See, the ACLU is bad for children and other living things. And when liberals finally realize that, of course, it'll be probably in the next world. Two, why is it that the Obama administration is still reluctant to label these situations as acts of terrorism? Three, why is it that most of the American media is unwilling to publish this information so that we have to depend on either Fox News or the foreign press to uncover these things? throwback outfits to be thrown out in France. I told you a French parliamentary panel has recommended curbing the wearing of Muslim veils in certain public facilities. You see, Al-Qaeda tried to use weapons of cultural mass destruction against the French, but even the far-left people of that nation will not stand for it. The French may be socialist, but they're not suicidal as we are. But in the United States, it's a different story. Apparently, the left is willing to let women be treated like chattel as long as their throwback husbands demand it. Those are the headlines for the Savage Nation. Play Bob Dylan, you know, the one I like with the he that has, that has, that has, the he that has, and who's the ha, and has the no, and this, and the times they are a-changing, and the guy that don't have this will have that, and the guy that has that will not have this, and you'll be cleaning the toilet, and the other guy will be pushing your head into the bowl.
Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again.
All right, Bobby, sing it, we need you.
Don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin.
Yeah, Bobby, sing.
And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the time
oh,
they
my God,
are
I got chills up
changing.
My spine. The loser now will be the win. So we have all the losers now have won, and look what they're doing. All right, 9 minutes. The losers won. The losers now will be the win. Good, the losers won. The whole pack of them won. They're in charge. They can't stop a bomber. It was a Flying Dutchman who stopped the bomber. Not the losers. The winners. The losers. The winners. The winners that are running the country. Running the government. And what are they doing? Wrecking it. Wrecking everything. They inherited a $1 trillion deficit from the gangsters called Republicans, the thieves that left us before. And their solution to a $1 trillion deficit is make it $3 trillion. Then $4 trillion. It doesn't matter. The losers now are on the win. They're incapable of running this country. I know people who run a yogurt store that could run this country better than Obama can. I know people who own a hardware store who could do a better job than the chairman of economic advisors could do because he never ran a store in his life. He doesn't know what it's like to buy a product, gamble on a product, put that product in the store, market that product, sell it at a loss if you can't sell it. They know nothing about anything because the loser is now the win. And my friends, what they're going to do as sure as I'm standing here is take the greatest enterprise the world has ever seen and destroy it. You know, tonight is Obama's first State of the Union speech. We all know that. We all kind of know what he's going to say. They've leaked it to the press over and over again. You know, he's going to act like a populist, and he's going to promise this and that. Joining us now from the Heritage Foundation is Brian Darling, who has his ideas on what Obama should be talking about instead of what he's going to be talking about. Brian Darling, welcome back to the Savage Nation. What should President Obama be talking about tonight?
Thanks for having me on. The president tonight needs to talk about the economy, and he needs to talk about real job growth by lowering taxes, not all these gimmicks he's proposing with all this extra government spending and a new jobs program. He also needs to propose not a freeze in government spending, but how about a cut in government spending? And he needs to take a look at entitlement programs and entitlement reform to see if he can actually cut the federal budget that's been growing through leaps and bounds over the past few years. This freeze is feel-good politics and will do nothing to lower the debt. Another issue, he needs to back away from his Wall Street bashing populist rhetoric. Having a huge bank tax and calling them fat cats may make you feel better, but it's not going to do anything to turn around our economy. And finally, and most importantly, the president needs to show that he's listening to the American people and not ignoring them and not showing contempt for them on health care and other issues. He's not governed with transparency. He's not allowed the American people to see what's going on during the healthcare negotiations, and he needs to take a step back and understand that the people of Massachusetts with the Scott Brown election and New Jersey and Virginia with the gubernatorial elections, they were telling Washington, D.C., we don't like your Obamacare bill. We don't like this healthcare bill. He needs to take it and throw it into the garbage can and start over from scratch.
Well, I don't see Obama wanting to cut taxes.
I think it's going to be hard for the president to endorse tax cuts. I just don't think he has it in him, but he can do some things that will spur more economic growth. For example, I mean, we are in the midst of very high unemployment, very slow growth, and it's because we have too much federal spending and too much government borrowing. The bailouts need to end. All these pork barrel stimulus bills and other pork barrel spending, they're not going to get our country back on track. I mean, this high unemployment comes primarily because we don't have job creation in the country. We're not helping out small businesses to turn this economy around, because small business is the engine of the U.S. economy. So what needs to happen is, if the president isn't going to get out there and say we're for tax cuts, what he can do is get rid of some of the bureaucratic government regulations, maybe allow some of the Bush tax cuts to continue in the future, and free up this economy.
Healthcare bills, green jobs, how is he going to have a spending freeze with these absurd ideas?
The president... He's talking about a freeze. He wants to freeze government spending. But what he's doing is he's playing a game with the American people. He's freezing at the high levels that he had last year. He's exempting entitlement programs. They've already said that this won't affect education, a massive expansion in federal education programs, which they want to go forward with. What are they going to cut? What are they going to freeze? The proof is in the pudding, and the president has been very well known for making many promises and not following through in these promises. So he's going to have to get up in front of the American people, say that he's going to have a freeze, but he's also going to have to do something to implement it. He's going to have to threaten to veto bills, pork barrel bills, any bill with an earmark in it. He's going to have to stand up to Congress and finally say to Congress, stop spending so much money. So if this promise is going to come to fruition, a freeze, and if we're going to end up getting in a situation where we actually cut spending, the president needs to start threatening Congress with veto threats. Maybe he doesn't have it in him, but that's what he needs to do to actually cut federal spending.
How's Obama going to handle the bank problem?
I think most Americans agree that the individuals in Wall Street did help to cause a problem. They are greedy. They are taking too big of bonuses when our economy is not doing well. And then they're not running their companies well. But taxing the banks and calling them fat cats, that may make you feel better, but it's not going to do anything to turn around the economy. We're in a grim situation right now, and the Heritage Foundation has put out a new book, The Index of Economic Freedom. We put it out every year. And in this book, we actually have the United States going from the top tier of a free category to mostly free. So the policies of this administration, the bailout policies, overspending, have caused this nation to fall from being the freest, economically freest nation in the world, down to the next tier, and we're below Canada at this point, and that's sad. So this federal government needs to do something to turn it around, and trying to take over and regulate Wall Street, trying to run General Motors, trying to run all aspects of our economy, including healthcare and energy, that's not going to make us more free. It'll make us less free. We need to embrace capitalism, and we need to do things that will turn this economy around and put people back to work.
Obama has shown no signs that he's listening to anyone but his own advisors, certainly not the public.
Sadly, the president has already shown that he's not listening to the American people after what happened in Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, a liberal bastion, the state that I'm proudly from, a Republican candidate, Scott Brown, not a very well-known state senator, won by 5 points over a more well-known Attorney General Martha Coakley. That's shocking, staggering. It hasn't happened in that state since 1972. They haven't even had a Republican go to the House of Representatives in the last 10 years. And what happens after that act happened? And those people were saying to Washington, D.C., we hate big government. We don't like your approach to health care. Somehow, the Obama administration is spinning it as if they're just angry. This is all George Bush's fault. He destroyed the economy. Therefore, the people of Massachusetts are just angry and they were just taking it out on Democrats. Not true. They specifically said they don't like the president's approach to health care, and the president's staff has been in denial. It's very important to see what the president says with regard to health care. If the president forges forward with Obamacare, it shows he has contempt for the American people. He's not going to listen to him, and he's going to try and pass Obamacare through all means necessary. If he takes a step back and says, maybe we need to look at different aspects of my plan, maybe pass some piecemeal, that's a different aspect, and that may show that he listened a little bit. But it's amazing that we have a president that went to Massachusetts and campaigned for Martha Coakley for Senate. Coakley lost. He campaigned in the Democrat gubernatorial candidates in New Jersey and Virginia just a few months ago. They both lost. Hopefully he hears a message from the American people that he needs to change course, or else he's going to be having a very difficult one-term presidency.
And what about national security?
The president needs to stress that battling terrorism should be job number one in foreign policy. The massacre at Fort Hood and the attempted Christmas Day bombing should be a wake-up call for Washington and all of America that we are still under attack. Our country is not using all the tools in the toolkit to protect America from terrorism. And even worse, the Obama administration seems ambivalent over the fact that the legal authority for key investigative methods granted under the Patriot Act are about to expire. You look at the way that this administration wants to bring terrorists to New York City to try them, and everything else that's happened over the past few months, and this administration really needs to step up, speak at the State of the Union. The president needs to speak at the State of the Union with a strong voice, talking about the threat of terrorism and what he's doing specifically to stop that threat.
Brian, darling, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks again for having me on.
All right, play music for me now.
All the leaves are brown. All the leaves are brown. And the sky is gray. And the sky is gray.
Savage signs with All Sports Station in San Francisco. Michael Savage says sports fans are generally tuned out of politics, and I want to tune them in to what is happening in this great country. I'll be right back.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one-stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
We have talked about how the mainstream media is not speaking out about my being banned from Britain, but there are many people still speaking out on the internet about this travesty. Joining us now is Andrew Durham with WebCommentary.com, who has written a recent article discussing the danger of ignoring Michael Savage's plight. Andrew Durham, welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'm glad you wrote it, but what motivated you to write this article on my behalf?
Well, Michael, the reason I wrote it was because I've been following it for the last year or so, and I've been listening to, you know, these other talk show hosts talking about the state of this government, you know, the travesties that are being done to this, you know, United States, yet they're not even covering one of the most important things in the world, you know, which is freedom of speech. And then you find out that it's not even because of freedom of speech. It's not even because somebody's inciting violence or inciting, you know, anything. It's because of race, and it's being ignored. And I have an enormous problem with that, especially when you have people who are trying to champion individual rights according to the Constitution, that this is being totally ignored. It's ultimately offensive to somebody like me.
Why do you suppose the Rush Limbaughs, the ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN and company are silent? Because now I'm lumping Limbaugh, Hannity, and O'Reilly in with ABC, CBS, and NBC. They've all become one part of the giant mainstream media.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, it's like I wrote in my article, you can propagandize the American public aggressively or passively. You can propagandize any population by not mentioning something. And it's because you don't belong to the good old boys network. You know, it's the popular boys club. And the reason is very simple, because they're into ratings. Limbaugh wanted Hillary Clinton elected. That didn't work. But that ultimately had the effect of getting Obama elected. You don't get ratings unless you have an enemy, unless you have someone to fight against. And that's what all of these people have joined together to do. You know, there's something deeply wrong with that. There's something deeply wrong with that, if only because these people are entirely uneducated, you know, and don't have the popular interest in mind. They have their own bank accounts in mind. And I have an enormous problem with that.
But the fundamental issue is our freedom of speech. How can this be ignored?
Because they're not terribly intelligent. They think free speech is saying whatever, you know, incites the populace. What they're not doing is giving free speech that incites the intelligent populace. You know, the people that know what's good to keep a nation together. You, on multiple occasions, have said that no nation state has survived in history of mankind with multiple languages, with multiple cultures. That's what defeated Rome. You know, why we can't learn from history, and you've said this numerous times, why we can't learn from history baffles me. So that only leads me to believe that there's something else going on that, you know, that wants to control the public, because this nation has gotten too large. Either you have a nation or you don't.
The problem is that I don't follow the bucket carrier playbook.
No, that's exactly right. It's because if you listen to Limbaugh, if you listen to Hannity, what they're doing is they're pressing a political genocide against independents and moderates. In other words, they're trying to push out of the decision-making free-thinking people. And this nation supposedly was born on free-thinking people. And I would like to see that continue. But if you're going to push one against the other, like I said before, you know, you need an enemy to get ratings. You need an enemy to get support. What people don't like are people that think for themselves, which is what you do. And the fear in that is somebody who might actually be qualified for the office might get elected.
Well, what needs to be done to break and fix this one-party system?
Term limits. People that don't have to register for a particular party to participate in primaries. You know, what you need is people who are free to think for themselves to get involved in the process. But, you know, I've lost faith in the process. I think everything is determined beforehand. And the best we can do is circle the wagons, to be honest with you.
Do you see any candidate for anything that fits that profile?
No, I don't. I'm really sick and tired of hearing about Paul Lente. No one knows who he is. Scott Brown, you know, he may be, you know, a good person. He needs a better speechwriter. But nobody gets where they are, A, if they have a conscience, or B, if they're not already ordained. And I think, you know, those of us who are free-thinking already know that. And we're going to have to live with it. I mean, look at the choices we had the last time around. You know, you read any of the conservative websites online, and all they did was talk about Obama to the choir. You know, they were preaching to the choir. We already knew this crap. I mean, I got to be honest with you, Michael. It's like I'm afraid to write some things sometime. You know, once you're out there, you're out there.
Andrew Durham, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, thank you for having me on the show.
I have so many good callers. Let me jump to them right now. Tina in Chicago, welcome. Go ahead. From WIND, the flamethrower in Chicago. What's on your mind?
Well, the reason why I'm calling is that I grew up in Brooklyn. Obviously, my accent, I'm there. But I do have to tell you that the...
Yeah, wait. In your case, the word accent should be spelled with A-X-E. I like that.
But I love with the gefilte fish and everything on hysterical driving back from work.
No, the word accent takes on a new meaning with you. You're worse than me. So what's on your mind, Tina?
I could say accent, but that's no good. But in any event, the Berg family own the Wax Museum in Coney Island. And I'm only in my mid-40s, so...
You actually knew the people who owned that Wax Museum where the murderers were shown in wax?
Yes, I did. It was
amazing. I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you don't even know who owns anything. Who the heck was the wax sculptor who made those figures, I'd like to know? You know, I've been in Madame Tussauds in London years ago when I was allowed to go there. They're very well done, but they didn't emote. They didn't create any emotion in me. The Wax Museum in Coney Island at that time was frightening. Where are the wax figures, Tina? Can I buy any of them? Can I buy the wax rendition from the Berg descendants of George Metesky, the mad bomber?
If there's a way that I could get in touch with you off the air, I could get in touch with
First of all, I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. That's number one. But number two, I'm not kidding. I'd like to buy. I don't want to buy the chicken farm thing. That I could do without. But the Metesky guy, I'd like to buy the wax figure. Where did they end up, a thing like that?
I know that it was the husband's family that did it, if it was the crazy brother that used to
but
do it.
But they always sell off. When they sell something, there's always a buyer for something. Somebody must have bought the wax figures.
I'd have to do some research for you.
Well, because I'll tell you, if I can get George Metesky, the mad bomber, in wax, perhaps Obama can use him with a tape recorder as spokesmouth.
It would be better than him speaking.
It'd be better than what we have, the gefilte fish there that he's using.
Oh, and Mother's is another brand, but the Manischewitz is 100% with you.
You heard my joke, huh?
Well, Manischewitz is the main people because I know that the stripes...
All right, Tina, here's what we're going to do. Stay in the line. You ever open up a bottle of that bottled fish? Whew, the stinks that come out of it. You got to be careful. What do you think? They use the best quality of these fishes? These fish they put in the jar. What do you think? They're going to get the highest quality? The whole thing with fish. Lately, I don't know what to do anymore. I mean, I wrote the books on nutrition 30 years ago. As I get older, I find myself going back to eating horrendous foods. Meat and potatoes are safer. Chicken, meat, and potatoes. Most seafood, I don't know, I'm sorry, is tainted. I mean, you know the truth is, shellfish, a nightmare. I break every time I eat a shrimp now. I turn red. Maybe I have a seafood allergy. And fish is iffy. You know, you got to buy it from the market. In my day, I mean, if you bought fish from a fishmonger, they'd let you smell it. Can you imagine them letting you smell a fish today anywhere? First of all, it's in plastic in a supermarket. Go rip off the cellophane. You'd get arrested for contamination. Where can you even smell a fish? And you look in the cabinets of a fish. Let's say you go to a major market. It's pathetic to look at the fish department. It's like fish looks old. I don't know. So you go back to meat and potatoes, and you wind up with cholesterol. But at a certain point, it doesn't matter. You're going to die anyway. but you don't want to get sick. The trick is to stave off the inevitable as long as you can, particularly debilitating illnesses. You don't want to wind up with, like, crippled and hobbling.
Savage.
While we're waiting for Obama's State of the Union speech, let's hear him talk about how transparent his administration has been.
We had to make so many decisions quickly in a very difficult set of circumstances that after a while, we started worrying more about getting the policy right than getting the process right.
People think you ended the day. This is not who I was in 2008. These deals with Florida.
Let's hold on a second, Diane. I mean, I think that this gets into a big mush. So let's just clarify. I didn't make a bunch of deals.
Yeah, right. So what will he be saying tonight? His press secretary, the living gefilte fish, now speaks.
The president will speak about health care. There's clearly a caricature of a health reform bill that is viewed differently by the public than when you break out its component parts. He'll take some time to discuss the important efforts that we've made in counterterrorism, continue to discuss what we've done in our efforts, not simply to confront in Southeast Asia the threats of terrorism, but in Africa, in the Middle East. I think he looks at the State of the Union as a time in which to update the American people on what's been done and where we go from here going forward. This is not about him. This is about what we have to do going forward for the American people.
Let's check in with Bugs Bunny, Hank Paulson, who I think is still testifying before Congress.
If AIG had failed, I can't. Yes, in November, in the TARP, we made the Fed obviously can print money, and that's the right question, Congressman. Okay, what I believe we were as I've said, and this isn't me trying to suggest anything was done wrong. if I can't comment beyond what I've said.
Here's a good story for you who are germophobic. I'm a germaphobe. If anyone sneezes, I leave the room. I was in a house of worship 3 weeks ago. Everything was going well till a sneezer appeared 2 rows ahead of me. I left. That's all. God would have to understand, I figured. But it was not just a sneeze. I'm not talking about a dust sneeze. This was a mucosal sneeze that could have infected the entire house of worship. And the guy didn't do it once. He did it 5 times. That's it. Goodbye, Charlie. I was out of there. So I'm a germophobic in that regard, because I say to people, I don't shake their hand. I do the ghetto thing with the fist. It's a smart thing. It's very Chinese. I like it. People try to shake my hand. Now I do the ghetto thing, like a basketball with the fist. They laugh. I said, well, I do it because I don't have to touch your hand. I said, they're smart. The Chinese shook their own hand. They were even smarter yet. You went to shake it. Remember the ancient pictures? They'd shake their own hand. They were, well, I need to touch your hand? What's handshakes about? So, anywho, I don't, if I'm in a room, a sneeze, a cough, once is okay. But if it's very fluid, there's a lot of fluid, I leave. I don't like, because I know it's spraying. Even from high school days, they showed, how come in my day, if they showed a sneeze, they showed it in slow motion, and how far a sneeze spread the germs? Like a whew, like 12, 15 feet, right? You knew to avoid. My mother said, don't use a public water fountain. And there were other kids, they'd stick their mouth fountain in Queens. They had like stone fountains and like water. And it was always like never a lot of enough water. It was always like within a quarter of an inch of the spout. There was always like a schmuck who'd put his mouth over the, he'd like suck on it. You'd think the guy was crazy. I wonder where those kids wound up. They have to have wound up working in government somewhere. I don't mean for Obama. Let's not get absurd. Like the MTA, something like that. So what I'm getting at is I've always been germophobic, and I read a story that Norway has practically wiped out the superbug that was infecting the nation and has made Norway one of the most infection-free nations in the world. And take a guess what they did to wipe out the superbug in Norway. It's not that they took a drug. It's not that they ate certain foods. It's not that they exercised. It's not that they instituted Obamacare with another incompetent doctor telling you nothing and to go home and take an antibiotic. It's the opposite. Do you know what they did to eliminate the superbug? Do you know what they did to eliminate the contagious staph infection that had been killing tens of thousands of patients in the most sophisticated hospitals of Europe, North America, and Asia this year? Norwegians stopped taking antibiotics. In fact, it became a crime for a doctor to prescribe an antibiotic unless it was a medical necessity. Now, how many doctors in this country will have a patient come in with a sort of non-specific symptoms of a cough, and they'll give you an antibiotic? And the patient, you know, doesn't know any better, and they take it. And I tell people, is it a viral infection or a bacterial infection? Yeah, duh, I don't know. I said, well, you may be making it worse with an antibiotic. And they look at me like I don't know what I'm talking about. But now Norwegian doctors know what they're talking about. And they prescribe fewer antibiotics than any other country. So people do not have a chance to develop resistance to these antibiotics. And that comes down to the whole story. A doctor says there, if I treated someone with an infection in Spain with this penicillin, I would probably be thrown in jail. And rightly so, because it's useless there. It's a type of penicillin they use on a very specific type of infection. And they say Norwegians now are sanguine about their coughs and colds, toughing it out through low-grade infections. We don't throw antibiotics at every person with a fever. We tell them to hang on, wait and see, and we give them a Tylenol to feel better. Now, I don't use Tylenol. I don't use drugs like that because they're toxic. They're liver-damaging, in my opinion. They're absolutely to be avoided, most of these drugs, incidentally, particularly if you have a hangover. Don't you dare use any of those over-the-counter medications. If you have to use anything, use an aspirin. Don't go near those other acetaminophens. You're just going to wind up with a liver transplant eventually. They're toxic to the liver. They're toxic to the kidneys. I've been saying this for 15 years. I've been writing about it for 15 years. I didn't do the original research, but I knew enough to study the original research and to publicize it. And so in Oslo, Norway, they have soothing but non-medicated lozenges, sprays, and tablets. All workers are paid on days they or their children stay home sick. And drug makers aren't allowed to advertise, reducing patient demands for prescription drugs. Now, compare that to America, where every other ad is for a medication, primarily for painkillers. Every other medication is a painkiller in America. Every normal quirk and slight this, they want you to drug it to death, and you wonder why there's such a line for a liver transplants in this country. Anyway, the bottom line is that the use of antibiotics became out of control in Norway, and the staph infections became rampant because of the use of the antibiotics. The staphylococcus became penicillin resistant. And now, because they've cut back on antibiotics for generic use, the people are getting better. And the question is, can Norway's program really work elsewhere? I don't want to do a medical show right now, but the solution to kill a superbug found in Norway, the solution is cut back on antibiotics. And your take-home message is, the next time Dr. Quack gives you an antibiotic for a cold or a cough, say to Dr. Quack, is it a viral infection or a bacterial infection? If Dr. Quack gets mad at you and says, I don't know, then don't ever go back to Dr. Quack.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.